The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Holy guacamole.
Whoa.
Albin?
Yes.
I don't know where to start. Ladies and gentlemen, listen carefully.
Okay.
In a couple of minutes, I'm talking to Patrick Byrne. He is going to tell us things. I just did the interview, and we're going to play it right after this. Hold on to your hat. It is unbelievable. And I mean, it's genuinely unbelievable in the sense that many people won't believe it. But listen to it. You can judge for yourself. It is absolutely insane. He talks about things in the so-called deep state. He's had huge involvement with the deep state that will curl your hair if it's straight, straighten your hair if it's curly. Think of the money you could save on hair products just by listening to this program.
And he's revealing some things he has not revealed anywhere else, so you got to listen.
Well, yeah, it's actually newsmaking stuff, which was not normal for this show, so you got to listen.
That's right.
I'm not kidding. It is astonishing, astonishing. That's coming up right after this segment. And then we have Jack Graham, my dear friend, Jack Graham, pastor of Prestonwood Baptist. He and his wife have been married 51 years. I love them. They're amazing. And he's going to be talking about depression. But this this conversation with Patrick Byrne, I promise you, we're going to get it up on video ASAP, share it with people. It's just it's important. If you're an American, it's important stuff to be tracking. But I have to share some equally astonishing things from what happened to me recently.
Yes.
Last week, I was in Kansas City at IHOP, International House of Prayer. Mike Bickle is somebody that I have known about since 1990. He is a legendary figure, very affable, normal, wonderful person, but theologically incredibly brilliant, just brilliant. He's in Kansas City at IHOP, and he invited me along with Francis Chan, along with Ken Fish, and Chris Reed. Chris Reed is a young man, he's in his mid-30s, who has a prophetic gift that is beyond comprehension. If you are in a room with him and you see what he does, it is amazing. I will tell you a couple of things that he did. And this is something a lot of people think, oh, this is sorcery, this is witchcraft. Yeah, it could be, but it's not in this case. And I think you have to be clear that there are certain people that are very gifted, and he it's amazing to be with him. It's like being, you know, with Chris Angel, Mind Freak, or whatever, except it's real.
Right. Yeah,
it's not illusion.
You've got to love IHOP, International House of Prayer, because you come for the pancakes
and
stay
for the prayer.
And
you stay for the prayer. There, that's what they say. And the boysenberry syrup, it's good.
Good.
Okay, so listen. So I was there, and we're not going to have time to go into this now, but I will just whet your appetite before I tell you about Sean Foyt and the Bronx. We were in the Bronx on July 3rd with Sean Foyt, Let Us Worship, mind-bending. It's been a crazy, crazy, crazy week. But before I go into Sean Foyt and what happened with him, I just want to say that Mike Bickle has been involved in what we call the prophetic for over 30 years. Actually, way before that, it began in the early 80s, where he met a guy, some people will know about this, but a guy named Bob Jones, not the Bob Jones of the university, but a Bob Jones who's kind of like a hick Arkansas dude who had one of the most amazing prophetic gifts. And in about 1983, Bob Jones tells Mike Bickle just kind of what's going to happen in the next 40 or 50 years. And Mike Bickle doesn't believe it. It just sounds crazy. But then as you start to get into the weeds, it becomes crazier because he was dead on in a lot of this stuff. There's a figure named Paul Kane I had the privilege of meeting about 20 years ago through my friend Jack Deere. Paul Kane was extremely close to Mike Bickle. John Wimber figures into this. Ken Fish was close to John Wimber. And the long story I won't share now, but the short version of it is that there were things that Paul Kane prophesied and that Bob Jones had prophesied, which are coming to pass now. Now, again, this stuff I know sounds fringy and loony to folks, but I'll try to unpack this probably with Ken Fish and with Mike Bickle in the weeks and months ahead, because it is when you start listening to it, it becomes more and more fascinating and more difficult to discount. I mean, there are people who will discount anything, no matter, they just don't want to believe things. But this is at least fascinating. But while I was there, I experienced some of what Ken does. I've seen Ken do this before, and what Chris Reed does. They ministered. I was in conversation on the stage before the ministry time with Ken and Chris. I was on the stage with Mike Bickle and Francis Chan, whom I had not had the privilege of meeting before last week. Delightful brother. And we're not on the same page on a number of things. And so it was a wonderful conversation. They both were interviewing me about Bonhoeffer and then about Luther. And those videos are online. I don't know exactly where they are, but I'm posting everything on my Twitter and on Facebook. And of course,
the
I probably never mentioned it before, but the newsletter, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not subscribed to ericmetaxas.com to the newsletter, please sign up. I can't tell you what you're missing. One of the things you're missing, I will skip ahead. So we were in Kansas City, planning to be there for a few days, and I have to go back again this week for the end of this conference. But I had to come home. I was so annoyed. Sean Foyt, who has become my new best friend, he was planning one of his amazing Let Us Worship events in New York. And I thought, I've got to be there. I want to be there. The problem is I had to get up at 4 a.m. to catch a flight from Kansas City to get home, to drive to the Bronx to be at this event. And I was really thinking it's going to rain. Now they're going to do it indoors. I got to just cancel this. It's just crazy. I'm going to, have a nervous breakdown. Well, we went, we did it. And it was one of those things you think, how could I have possibly even considered not being there?
Right.
Because when you experience Sean Foyt and Jay Koopman, who's his right-hand man, when they do a Let Us Worship event, I really have to be honest and say that I've never seen anything quite like it. They are utterly affable, energetic, but spiritually serious in a way you almost never see. In other words, they were doing what is really called spiritual warfare. They don't go typically to places like Dallas. They go to places like the Philadelphia's inner city, Detroit, the Bronx. Where we were in the Bronx, 9 people have been killed recently. It's a very dangerous area. And they go in there in the name of Jesus with a level of boldness that is just glorious to watch. And part of the reason I say this is because this guy, Sean Foyt, it's spelled F-E-U-C-H-T. He was on this program, as you know. But Sean Foyt spent about 2 decades going into Afghanistan, Iraq, into the ISIS zones when it was controlled by ISIS. He went to North Korea. He's fearless. He goes with God. He preaches the gospel, the good news of Jesus, and he does worship, and he does spiritual warfare. In other words, they don't just go and say, yeah, we're here, we're Christians. Yeah. They go with the authority of Jesus into these demonic places.
Wow.
And actual miracles happen. Now, that's part of the magic sauce. When people see miracles, when people are healed, they forget about their intellectual objections or their ideological objections, and they just go, whatever this is, I want it. I've been in pain for 30 years. Yeah. What just happened?
That's great.
So Sean Foyt and Jay Koopman and I and Suzanne was with us. And our dear friends, the Juntas from Connecticut, showed up, and other friends showed up. It was just So wonderful. And they made a video. I posted it on Instagram on my story. And I should, I'm going to try to post it on other social media. But you need to see this. And you need to watch. I hope you'll watch the videos of what we did in Kansas City last week. Again, you got to sign up for the newsletter, airgridaccess.com. I'm going back. There's going to be more stuff. Okay, folks, when we come back, I promise you, Patrick Byrne, listen to this conversation. You'll see. We'll be right back. Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their three-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm just announcing that because you're wondering, what is Eric Metaxas doing on a show? It's my show. But the good news for you is I get to interview fascinating personalities, none more fascinating than the guest I have today. His name is Dr. Patrick Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E. He's not a medical doctor, so I'm not going to ask him for free advice. But what he is... This is how, you know, you want to give people credibility when you introduce them. So all I need to tell you is he's a billionaire. He's created wealth. He got his Bachelor of Arts in Chinese Studies from Dartmouth. Is that Dartmouth Prison? Patrick Byrne, welcome.
Thank you, Eric. Yeah, it may have felt like that some days. What
actually, Dartmoor Prison. Forgive me. Dartmouth College up in New Hampshire. Listen. You are hard to sum up. Let me before we get into the issue of the book and the election and everything. You're not a Christian or a person of faith, and you were not really any kind of a conservative recently. In other words, you're just a businessman mostly, at least up until maybe recently.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I was raised actually a very devout Catholic, and I took it quite seriously. I was an altar boy. I did, I would say, by the time I was in my late...
So was Stalin. Please continue.
Yeah, no, well, I'll put it this way. I know the Bible better than just about any Catholic you ever met.
Okay, which means I like to say, literally nothing, but I didn't mean to get you off on a faith conversation. Say what you like. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, just that I like to say as a teenager, I majored in Catholic and I minored in Jew. I know more about Judaism than anyone named Patrick you'll ever meet in your life. And I know a lot about the Bible for a guy like... So, but I went on, I did a PhD in philosophy. And when you... That sort of... To me, that was a way of... Well, to me, a lot of the energy that I think the people like you associate with spiritual energy, to me, is actually devoted to... I ended up doing my PhD in the intellectual history of the U.S. Constitution. So to me, in a sense, that is my that's where my spiritual.
It's kind of funny because I always think of you as an intellectual lightweight. And yet, and there we have evidence on the other side of the things. Listen, I got a joke with you because what we're talking about, Patrick Byrne, is so serious that I've got to start out with silly joking. Before we get to the most serious part, I'm just saying you're not today some kind of evangelical or whatever. And up until recently, you weren't even somebody who voted Republican, particularly. You were more, I don't know, libertarian. How would you describe yourself 10 years ago in terms of politics?
As my great friend Milton Friedman. Do you know who Milton Friedman was?
He's your friend? He was your friend?
Well, here's the quickest way to describe it. When Milton died, he called me a couple of weeks before he died, and he said, you know, I've set up my foundation to dissolve at my death, but I know the end is near, and Rose and I want to make one last change in our will. We want you to carry on, Patrick, for 10 years in our name. And he died 2 weeks later, and the Friedman Foundation became I became the chairman. I ran it per her instructions for 10 years. Then I stepped down and changed the name. So the quickest, it matters to about 1% of humanity, but Eric, you seem like the kind of guy that might matter. The quickest way to explain who I am is I'm the guy that Milton Friedman called a month before his death and said, I want to change my, one last change my will, carry on my name for 10 years.
Does that explain it? If people don't know who Milton Friedman is, read a freaking book. Hey, no, just kidding. If you don't know who Milton Friedman is, he was, I don't know, how do you describe him? Like just one of the premier economists of the century.
Well, you know, George Shultz was once, he was the greatest friend of liberty of the 20th century. Maybe you'd have to put Churchill in front of him. George Shultz was asked who was the most significant man he ever met. And he said of all the, I get verklempt when I say this, but he's, George Shultz gave a public answer, of all the kings and presidents and dictators and generals, generalissimos and everything, statesmen I met in my entire life, the most significant man of the 20th century was a little tiny academic scribbler from Chicago named Milton Friedman. So it's all about ideas. And
yes,
the
it
greatest
is.
Friend of liberty of the 20th century from an idea point of view would have to be Milton Friedman or Friedrich Hayek.
But obviously he came at it from economics and finance more than anything. And Hayek, Road to Serfdom, another huge name. I didn't know we'd be going here so early in the interview, but I'm glad to know this. You built Overstock.com into a $2 billion business and sold it, I don't know, how many years ago?
I got out 2 years ago, sold all my stock in order to kind of take on what I'm doing here.
Well, which leads me to my most important question. Could I borrow some money? Okay.
Well,
all right. Listen, don't answer now. I want you to pray on it. Don't answer now. I want you to pray on it. Okay. So, look, we got to talk about something really, really serious.
Sure.
You, when you were a businessman doing what you did, without any particular political affiliations, you discovered two problems, as you describe it. You call it the oligarchy. Which is Wall Street and the deep state. That is what led you into the lunacy of the 2020 election. So take us through that. In other words, as you were a businessman building a business that most people are familiar with, you bumped into problems with Wall Street and what we now call the deep state. How did that manifest itself in the process?
Deep question. Well, when you're a public company CEO, Eric, you're out there in the mix in different ways. You're out there with bankers and prime brokers and regulators and journalists and hedge funds in Greenwich, Connecticut. And I wasn't out there. I was out there swimming that milieu from we went public in June of 2002, and it didn't take long to smell skunk. And it came about because once I'd gotten to know the hedge funds and the bankers for enough time that they felt comfortable to take me out to dinner and such, various conversations of the form halfway through dinner, a few hedge guys putting down their forks and saying one form or another of the following sentence, you know, kid, we could make a lot of money together if you want to play ball.
Oh, I get it. You want
to
play ball.
It wasn't that hard for me to figure out the criminality.
It reminds me, but doesn't it remind you of the of Marlon Brando on the waterfront, you know, his brother Rod Steiger, you know, like you should have looked out for me. But it's like, yeah, we want to make some money. You got to play ball, take a dive. Now, you want to play ball? You want to make some money? In other words, do you want to do what is right, or do you want to be a crook but don't call it that and make some money? And you're telling me that these big, big, big deal people made this light offer to you over dinner. And what does that consist of when somebody says, you know, you want to play ball, you want to make some money? What corners are they talking about cutting?
Well, there's lots of ways that a CEO of a public company can be in cahoots with some hedge funds managers and everybody's pockets get lined big time. But as Milton Friedman said, there's no free lunch.
Did he say that? Is he the guy?
It was his teacher in 1930 in Columbia who said it, but he quoted it and made it famous.
That is one of the coolest things. That is so cool. There's no such thing as a free lunch, and you were friends with the man who made that popular. Okay, so please continue. Are we talking about things like insider trading? What are some of the things?
You're talking about it. You learn all kinds of inside information about your own, well, of course, your own company, and even things going on in other companies because you're talking to suppliers. You get a lot, when you're the public company CEO, you get a lot of inside information about what's going on in the industry. And you can certainly give head faints about your own company, your own stock, and line your pockets in different ways. But again, if you're doing that and the hedge funds are doing that, if you're doing that making tens of millions and the hedge funds are making hundreds of millions, there's no free lunch. That comes from somebody. And that comes from mom and pop, you know, in Paducah who just have their pension in the system. And that's really where it's coming out of. But the interesting part.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Go ahead. You're the boss.
Well, no, I guess what was it about you at that time that said, I don't know that I can play ball? Because most people in your position would play ball. Let's be honest. That's why we're in this situation in America.
Interesting question. I'd have to give it some thought because I don't think it ever occurred to me for a millisecond I would ever play ball. I'm quite confident it never occurred to me for one. All I was thinking when I hear something like that, all I'm thinking is, how do I take this son of a bitch down?
Well, And that's why I love you, Patrick Byrne, because honestly, that's what everybody should be thinking when any form of that question appears, not just with regard to finances, but somebody says, hey, you want to do this, you want to do that. You know, the first thing should be, how do I punch this guy in the head? Because what he is saying is like holding a gun to Lady Liberty's head. It is despicable.
You got it.
It harms everybody. And you are no patriot and no good person if you seriously entertain those overtures. So we're going to go to a break. Folks, I'm talking to Patrick Byrne. He was the head of the CEO of Overstock.com. And has now written a book getting into the election. The title is The Deep Rig, How Election Fraud Cost Donald J. Trump the White House by a Man Who Did Not Vote for Him. We'll be right back.
When you're drifting, comes a time when you settle down, comes a light.
Hey, folks, I'm talking to Patrick Byrne. You may know him as the founder and CEO of Overstock.com, $2 billion enterprise. More recently, he's been in the news because he didn't vote for Donald Trump. And yet, Patrick Byrne, what is the and yet? What happened after you didn't vote for Donald Trump?
He got robbed of the election. It was stolen from him. I was not a never Trumper, one of those nuts, one of the I think our country's gone kind of nuts with demonic people just screaming and they lost their
minds.
Funny
you should use the word demonic when you don't believe in that stuff, but go ahead. You're using it metaphorically. Listen, good enough for me. Go ahead.
Good enough.
But wait, you said the 2020 election, you didn't vote for him in 2016, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
I vote Libertarian. I just vote Libertarian. I never voted Democrat or Republican.
Say it again. You voted what?
I never vote Democrat or Republican. I just vote Libertarian.
Oh, so Libertarian. Libertarian. So was there a Libertarian candidate in 2016?
There was Jorgensen. That's who.
Okay,
I
but so don't you believe, I just have to ask this, don't you understand that you're giving a vote to Hillary Clinton, you're throwing away a vote when you vote for Jorgensen?
Well, there's a special, that's a great question here. And since it's coming out, and since it has come out in part, and I'm being very circumspect about this, but so I came out 2 years ago and explained that I had a kind of, let's say, a very rough, not to be proud of relationship with the government. And I revealed that I had worked for them on a number of occasions fighting crime. And
now,
I didn't go
now,
into.
Just to be clear, we've talked about this. Who approached you? Was it the FBI or the CIA? Who approached you initially and why? Or maybe you can't even
it
say
it. Actually, I don't want to go into all that. I don't want to go into that. I'm being very circumspect in what I say. I don't work, other than I don't work for the CIA. The one thing I've always had is I do not work for the CIA.
Okay, so it's obviously the FBI. So there you go. Okay, so, listen.
There's other parts of the government.
But here's my question, just again, so people track how you got into this election fraud. Why would folks in the government approach Patrick Byrne? What was it about you that they thought you could do for them to help them?
There's, in some of these matters, I don't want to go into too much, but in some of these matters,
you've written about this. People can go to your blog, and you've written extremely long essays detailing most of this. So I'm not trying to catch you or anything. I'm just saying,
no,
just so people have some idea what happened.
There are people who know I'm a patriotic American, and they know that if they come and talk to me about a problem and give me some direction, they can send me sort of churning into it. And sometimes you have more latitude working outside the government than inside. I've been told at various times, Patrick, in situations like this, there's the inside team and the outside team. You're the outside team. Okay. Other times I've been told, Patrick, sometimes before certain kinds of people talk, other kinds of people need to talk. You're that other kind of person. So there's these kind of vague ways that Uncle Sam lets you know what he wants, but he lets me know.
But I guess
what he
my point is that how do they know they should approach you? They know you're a patriot. What is it?
Yeah,
what is their leverage with you? They know you love America.
Yeah, they know that I love America, and I will do things on my own dime. Such as investigating Wall Street and turning stuff up, if directed, and somebody in the government. I come from a weird family. Although we're Republicans, and the kind of Republicans from Vermont, New Hampshire, our attitude is, you know, government should pave the road, build some schools, stay off my porch.
That's, you know what that's called? That's called being an American. That's an American idea about government. What?
Yeah. Well, not. All that said, my family is also one where I was raised that if a government official ever asks you for help, be it a cop or a sheriff or a senator,
exactly,
or somebody in law enforcement or in the National Security Council ever said, gee, we got this problem, we can't solve it,
right,
but we see that you could solve it real simple for us, you do it. It doesn't matter what party they're in. I've done it for Democrats. I've done it under Republicans.
But you're not, and you assume they're good guys. You don't know that they could be skunks. But let's move on. Now, some people listening or watching won't believe it. Those people exist. But here's the thing that they won't believe. Our government approached you to bribe Hillary Clinton. You've been very public about this. To the tune of $20 million. Explain that. I know there are a lot of people just thinking, there's no way, this sounds crazy, but if you can just try.
Well, you'll be happy to know that this is kind of, okay, they came to me, they actually, I didn't know we were going here, but it is the case.
Neither did I.
That in Thanksgiving of 2015, they came and they told me, we need your, I was dating Maria Butina, the Russian gal who's
not a spy and who's a good person and whom I know personally. So you were dating her. Go ahead.
I've never met a Russian. I'm so impressed with. If she wants to be president of Russia, she should go be president of Russia. She's a very impressive woman.
I will campaign for her. She's a wonderful woman.
They came to me and they said, look, we have something more important for you to work on. We need you to switch from this. We need you to set up Hillary Clinton in a bribe. And they explained to me that there were two groups in the FBI investigating the Clintons, the email group, which was a whitewash, but a group in New York of agents who was going after her financials and wanted to get her. Comey had been blocking, said there was insufficient evidence to set her up in a sting. But information had come in that she had taken one $20 million bribe, and this was all explained to me by FBI agents. And she had taken one $20 million bribe, and that sufficed as adequate predicate material, that information, that there'd been an agreement to set her, that they could set her up in a sting.
Okay, hang on. We're gonna put a pin in it, folks. That's a showbiz term, so we'll be right back.
Hey, get a rhythm. When you get the blues, come on, get a rhythm. When you you get the blues.
Folks, I'm talking to Patrick Byrne. Boy, this is a conversation. Patrick Byrne, you're telling us stuff that you've written about at length, in detail. So you said that the FBI, there are two branches of the FBI investigating the Clintons. One of them wants you to help them set her up in a sting. So tell us about that.
Well, I'm going to be circumspect. The assignment was, I will say that I asked who is, I said, I'm going to need a piece of paper for this. I've done things for you fellas before just on a handshake, but you're asking me to get involved in a federal election and bribe a presidential candidate. I'd like a piece of paper that says you're asking me to do this. They said, we'll go back to the office and talk. They came back in 2 days and they said, we've been told to tell you, you can't be given a letter, but the director says if you'll go to Washington, you can be shown a letter. And I said, oh, this is coming straight from Director Comey. And two federal agents leaned in and said, and I said, oh, this is coming from Director Comey and the president. And two federal agents leaned in and said, and I said, okay,
the president was President Obama. So your understanding was that President Obama wanted to compromise Hillary Clinton. Why?
Well, because I thought we were enforcing the law. I thought that what I thought that he was doing to the so first I thought it was law enforcement, and I will always help law enforcement. I help them. I'll throw this out there. I got to put this detail in. It may sound off, but it makes it. I got a phone call in December of, I think it was 09, from a senior FBI person who's told me, Patrick, we want you to first, the director sends his congratulations and thanks. This is essentially unprecedented. You've given us this on a silver platter, and you're going to see handcuffs come out this week, and you need to live the rest of your life knowing that everyone we arrest, they suspect your fingerprints are on their problems. A week later, they came out and arrested, or 3 days later, they arrested Raj Rajmaratan, the head of Galleon, and then they ended up indicted about 200 people across Wall Street, 09, 2010, 20, all that massive insider trading. I had brought them, I don't want to take over, the FBI people were wonderful, so I don't take credit from them, but I had brought them in the Senate Judiciary Committee a great deal of the predicate information that started that whole mess. So I had that as a background. So what they explained to me how stings work, skipping forward 6 years, they explained to me how stings work. They told me Obama wanted it done. I said from Director Comey and President Obama is good enough for me, consider Hillary bribe.
But before you go further, people want to know, why would Obama want to do that to Hillary Clinton? I mean, in two sentences, I don't get it.
Well, it's called law enforcement. The legitimate reason would be law enforcement.
Yeah, no, we all know the legitimate reason, but why would Obama want to do it beyond that?
The illegitimate reason was I thought, gee, maybe Obama doesn't want Hillary to be the Democratic nominee,
right,
and is going to take her out of the way and move somebody better in. Move somebody more to his liking in, maybe more lefty, maybe more malleable, tractable, who knows. That turned out not to be why they did it. And I've said this, and I successfully arranged a bribe. I successfully arranged a bribe, and how that happened was real simple. They said, here's the end state. There's another country who wants to pay a bribe. Your job is to friend, it's a government, a country I'd never been to. Patrick, here's the end state. You're going to find the bag man from that country. Sometime in the next 2 months, there's going to be a room anywhere in the world. And into that room, Hillary Clinton goes into that room, the bag man goes in, and they spend 10 minutes alone in a room. You make that happen. And I said, this is clearly going to take some of this from me. You guys cool? And they said, yeah, we're good. So it was a country to which I'd never been, a government I did not know. I had 2 months to befriend that government, find the bag man, convince them that I was the kind of guy who could and would make stuff like this happen. How one does that, I'll leave to your imagination, Eric. And it is the case that 7 weeks later, there was a room in Washington, D.C., and Hillary secretly was brought to that room to meet the bagman. The bagman met, and they met for 10 minutes. And they conducted an $18 million bribe. That happened on January 16, 2016. I'm not going to tell you what X is, but a day that ends with a teen of January 2016. And I know which day, I know what room number, what building, everything, but I'm not saying. But I
this is so right before the inauguration of President Trump.
Oh, this happened in January of 2016. And then what happened after that?
But I'm saying that's right before the inauguration of Trump, days before his inauguration, January 2016.
No.
What?
It was a year before. This was the beginning of the primary season.
Oh, stupid Eric. I'm sorry. Yes, thank you.
This was the beginning. It turned out, I'm not going to tell you, it turns out to have been about blackmail. And I don't want to go into any more detail right now, but other details will come out. Turned out to be about black. Well, I'll tell you now. I've been waiting to say this on big national. This is what happened. After successfully bribing Hillary Clinton $18 million, I was told I had to forget it and that it was a matter of life or death. And then I met with federal agents again, this time three of them. And I mean, I literally was told this is so. Just so you know, everything, I'm considered rogue. I'm going to get blown up or killed or something here. But just so you know, I've been informed that half of the government, I was literally told last June, Patrick, your name's on the lips of everybody at the FBI and CIA and DOJ, and half of them think you're a hero and half of them think you're Snowden, but too stupid to leave the country. So, but I'm just going to come out and tell you, because I should have done this what came out was the following understanding. Patrick, you need to understand that President Obama has, and this is word for word, President Obama, and there were four feds involved. These were the four feds of different flavors. And this was the words of one as affirmed by the others. Patrick, you need to understand that President Obama has his people across the federal bureaucracy at this point, but especially the Department of Justice. Hillary Clinton's going to be president for 8 years, and nothing's going to change that. But while she's there, think of there as being a Bunsen burner at the heart of the Department of Justice. The information about the two bribes you know about will be sitting on that Bunsen burner. The hand on the Bunsen burner, give me 20 more seconds and you will understand the last 5 years,
go.
Eric. The hand on the Bunsen burner, Patrick, is going to be one of Barack Obama's people. If Hillary's a good girl and defends Obamacare, the flame stays low. If she's a bad girl and thinks for itself, it gets turned up. That way, Barack Obama is going to manage Hillary Clinton for 8 years. Then she's going to step down and Michelle's going to run. And Patrick, that's the plan.
All right. When we come back, we're going to unpack this. Folks, we're not crazy. We're not making it up. Hang in there. We'll be right back.
The city streets are empty now. The lights don't shine no more.
Folks, I'm talking to Patrick Byrne. The book is The Deep Rig, How Election Fraud Cost Donald Trump the White House by a Man Who Did Not Vote for Him. Patrick, you just shared some stuff. Now, you have shared this previously on this program. So what is the piece that you want to reveal or that you haven't yet revealed? Because I am familiar with what you were saying, as amazing as it is. And most people have not heard what you just said until now. Go ahead.
There's two aspects to this. One is, unbeknownst to President Obama and James Comey and John Brennan, I had actually been sent to investigate them. And I'd been sent to investigate the United States government.
By?
For one thing. We're going to hold off on that.
Is it another part of the government or not?
By another part of the government.
Okay.
And I have, I'd been sent to investigate the government by another part of the government. And when this all happened, I decided to blow them up. And I blew them up in a way that history is going to have a little trouble. I set up my chain of command on a rape and murder charge. I treated Maria Butina, as you know her, you can call her and ask. I treated her like an angel, but I deliberately treated her like you would treat the czar's niece. But I deliberately set up my chain of command and made them sign off on things that they should never have signed off on. Whereas the truth was, I treated Maria, this is a very complicated story, we'll come back and tell us. I treated Maria like a princess, but I deliberately saw how far I could push my chain of command to see how far they would let me get away with it. And I basically tricked my chain of command into signing off on a rape and murder that never happened. And I did that because I was setting them up. And this is all, and Maria's confirmed all this and so forth. So I set up James Comey and John Brennan and tricked them into signing off on a rape and murder that never happened. And I did that in retaliation and in completion of the thing I'd been asked to do, which is to get to the heart of corruption in the government and expose it and disrupt it.
So you set them up in your own sting operation.
I set them up in my own. You're smart. They used me in a sting operation on Hillary that turned out to be blackmail. So I set up a sting operation, and they had made the mistake. They taught me all about stings, the legal analysis, predicate act, prior dispositions, all this stuff. And I very carefully laid out a sting and led my chain of command to walk into it. The only thing that is problematic about that is it turns out almost the entire United States government is corrupt. But the DOJ has known about this for 2 years. The DOJ has this whole story. They went in to Maria. They confirmed everything with her. Maria told them, I'm told. And also Sarah from Fox, Sarah Carter, interviewed Maria. And I'm told Maria said, I've never met a gentleman like Patrick Byrne. He never laid a finger on me. He just was the most perfect gentleman, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, I had been using the opportunity to set up my chain of command. And this is all going to turn into, unless they can keep burying it, it's going to turn into the biggest scandal that you can possibly imagine.
When do you think this will break publicly?
I think it's going to break this month.
This month?
I think it's all break. Yeah.
This month.
It's
okay.
Big.
So
big.
Potentially, since we don't have a lot of time, potentially, what are the big headlines of what's going to break?
Well, let's get off the let's get off stuff that happened 5 years ago. I'm here. I'm investigating the fraud because I was actually told 15 years ago to get to the bottom and prevent what's happening from happening, a takeover of our government by a corrupt force. So that's the truth is why I'm here in the middle of this situation right now. It's
okay.
To me, the last step of a mission I was sent on 15 years ago.
But you're telling me that this month you think something's going to break. And I'm just saying, like, what do you mean? What would break that would blow this up?
A news organization has done a very detailed account of that story I just skimmed through with you and checked and tied all kinds of things together. And I think it's going to explode in a very
big
way.
Okay. Well, listen, this is extraordinary. When we come back, we're going to be talking about your book, The Deep Rig, and a film coming out. Very exciting. Folks, don't go away.